Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And listeners, do not run away. We are talking about math in this episode, but we are not going to talk about, a whole bunch of, we're not going to rattle off a bunch of equations and talk about, the inner workings of algebra or geometry or calculus. Because if you're like me, you probably never really got into mathematics in school and you're not particularly good at it. And, anytime a math question comes up, you try and, force it on other people. And you absolutely cannot go to a bowling alley that does not have automated scorekeeper.
Right, right. Or you always say something like, I'm an English major.
Yeah.
To the response of what's 7 times 3 or something ridiculous like that. But I will say, yeah, stick around absolutely because nobody has more anxiety about math than I do and nobody is less of a mathlete than I am. And yet I find this question that we're going to pose to you and to ourselves absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, we're getting into the philosophical area of mathematics to a certain degree, and just talking about what it is, and indeed the question, is mathematics a human creation, a human invention, or is it a human discovery?
That's right.
So think about that. Mathematics, this thing that powers everything, pretty much everything that we do, from the device that you're listening to this podcast on right now to the science that has enabled civilization to reach the point that it has reached. But what is math, right?
Yeah, what is math?
We should back up. We're going to start, we're not going to really go back into the history books and talk about like who invented this and that because a lot of mathematics is pretty ancient to the point where we can't really place, attribute it to one particular individual or another. But we can back up to birth, to you when you were a baby.
Yeah.
And you were just, spit out on the world, gleaming with goo.
Nice.
Even then, your brain had some mathematics.
You were a mathlete and you didn't even know it.
Yeah, a minor mathlete at least.
Yeah.
Because you were born with something that we call number sense. All right? And a number, just to break it down, a number is a word and a symbol representing a count. Okay? That's the basics of it. You may call it 2, you may attribute it with the numeral 2, or you may have some other system of referring to it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in China, they have shorter words for their numbers.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons they're supposedly better at mathematics, because there's less, it's kind of like cutting a penny off of every transaction. It adds up.
Right.
It allows everything to move.
You don't have
faster.
To have a new word for 200.
Right.
We won't get into that math system, but
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
But this is necessary because imagine yourself in the wild and you encounter a dog, like a wild dog that's barking at you. And then you were to encounter two wild dogs barking at you. Being able to differentiate between the two is essential. It's all about navigating a world full of multiple objects and moving objects.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of, like if you're just walking around the forest, there are a lot of trees. There are, wild dogs moving around. There may be other humans. I mean, just think all the things in your life that are in flux, and you have to be able to navigate that world, and that is what mathematics helps us do.
Well, and this is your brain in action, right? I mean, mm-hmm. When you enter a room, 99% of what you are seeing is not coming in through your eyes. It's actually what your brain is inferring.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're pointing to here is our brain structures and this idea that we might be hardwired to spatially differentiate as much as possible. That's what you're talking about, right?
Right.
When you come into a room, you're looking at the height, whether or not you know it, you're looking at the height of the walls. You're sort of creating this pattern in your brain of pattern recognition.
Right. And other animals do this too, but those other animals, like the gooey infant that you once were,
mm-hmm.
they
wipe that off actually after a while.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
All the infants I encounter are gooey. Some of the adults are gooey. Such a child will have no grasp of the human number system.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to know what 2 is or what 3 is or what 3 times 8 is. Those are things that are going to come with in time via education. But they still have that number sense. Then they can identify changes in quantity. And this basically equates to something called logarithmic counting.
Yes.
And neuroimaging research is actually studied the brains of infants. And, scientists have studied the brains of infants through, neuroimaging research. And, they've registered these, the mental activity going on as they, identify integral increases in physical quantity. So, like a baby, for instance, wouldn't be able to tell that much difference between 5 and 6 teddy bears.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 and 10, they'll definitely see because there's a definite logarithmic increase in quantity.
Yeah, and I thought this was really fascinating. To that point, there's an article from futurity.org, and it's called Babies Can Count Before They Can Communicate. And what they say is our findings indicate that humans use information about quantity to organize their experience of the world from the first few months of life. Quantity appears to be a powerful tool for making predictions about how objects should behave. And what I think is really important about that is predictions, because that is what math is about at the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm sitting there adding 1 and 1, then I'm trying to predict what the following number is going to be. And that's at the most basic level. I mean, we know this is applied throughout physics, throughout every single field that you can think of, in order for us to try to make sense and categorize our lives and predict future outcomes. Even chaos theory is an attempt to predict the unpredictable.
Right. Now, here's the thing, though, and this is where math begins, because we're not even really dealing with math yet. We're dealing with numbers. We're dealing with number sense. But as we're navigating this environment around us, the higher the math gets, the larger the numbers become,
mm-hmm.
the harder it is for us to process it. Like even, humans are systematically slower to compute 4 plus 5, than they are, to compute 2 plus 3.
Right.
Like when I was going over that in my notes, I could actually notice it since I'm not good at math. I could actually feel the difference in computing 4 plus 5 and 2 plus 3.
You could feel the brain power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is something that everyone experiences. Everybody, because we are not evolved to do arithmetic, high arithmetic, certainly not
no.
geometry or anything.
But I do think this is, I actually started looking through some information about autism,
mm-hmm.
In particular savants, and 10% of the autistic population is a savant, by the way. And an estimated 1% of non-autistic population is a savant. But when you think about that, and the reason I bring it up is because it's clear in those instances that the brain is working at a much higher cognitive function level than what we would normally be used to, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why you've got someone like Daniel Tammet. He's an autistic savant. And from the Guardian article, Genius Explains, Tammet, they say that Tammet broke the European record for recalling pi, the mathematical constant, to the furthest decimal point, to 22,514 decimal places.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Most of us can just say 3.14 and then trail off.
I can take
right?
it to 2 decimal points.
Right, yeah. Right. So he says that he found it easy because he didn't even have to think. To him, pi is an abstract set of digits. It's a visual story. It's almost like a film projected in front of his eyes. So in that case, we know that he has a brain that is hardwired for this kind of thinking in this really complex level, right?
Right. But even someone is gifted for numbers,
mm-hmm.
has to turn to an outside system. They have to augment their number sense, even if it's a particularly phenomenal one. And that's where mathematics begins to play.
Right.
Into play.
Yeah.
Well, actually, even before mathematics really becomes into play, we have as we've discussed in our five-fingered evolutionary podcast.
Yeah.
We start using our fingers. That's why so much of our number system is based on units of 5, 10, or 20.
Right.
Because that's what the tools that we had. It's like, you know, you can easily imagine this ancient, prehistoric individual doing math, and it's like, well, goodness, I'm having a hard time processing numbers beyond like 3 or 4 in my head. What can I turn to help me? Oh, look at these things.
Right.
And starts using his fingers, starts using his toes. From there, starts using other things, rocks, twigs. And before long, you have an emerging mathematical system.
Right. Yeah, and that's why we have these like 10-based, 20-based mathematical
right.
systems.
Decimal system, or the 20 is a vigesimal system.
Yeah, vigesimal, and this mm-hmm. 20-base, right?
Yeah. Even our numerals, like the Phoenician symbols that Arabic numbers are based on, those were in their original archaic forms, which our current system is derived from.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back at the ancient versions of it, the number, you could tell what the number was by the number of angles in the symbol.
Oh, right. Like, I remember this from your article, How Math mm-hmm. Works.
Yeah. And a lot of it doesn't stack up because like our 9 is a lot different from the ancient Phoenician 9.
Yeah.
But take the number 0.
Mm-hmm.
The 0 has no angles in it. Because it is nothing. The numeral 1 has 1 angle in it.
Right.
Because it is 1. 2 has 2 angles in it in the archaic version, etc. So that's fascinating. But that's another example of the human brain can only do so much, and you have to build outward. It's like the trailer that one is building onto and creating all these additional rooms.
Right.
We're the trailer, and we begin building the system and out from ourselves to help us to better compute the world around us.
Well, and again, it's this idea of symbols and abstraction, which is pretty fascinating, right? Mm-hmm. Because math becomes something that's much more than just, you know, trigonometry or even 1 plus 1. It is a system of symbols that we use to, extrapolate our existence in
yeah.
a sense. But I did want to talk a little bit about pattern recognition. I know we've already brought it up, but I wanted to say a little bit more about the brain and the fact that we're pretty much pattern recognition machines. You all have all these causal connections between A and B. And this is from a Scientific American article called Turn Me On, Dead Man.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that title later if you want. But they say that as when our ancestors, the causal connections between A and B are like when our ancestors associated the seasons with the migration of game animals. We are skilled enough at it to have survived and passed on the genes for the capacity of association learning.
Right.
So again, what we're doing is attributing some sort of symbol to these associations, these patterns that we see, to document our world and try to navigate it in a better way.
Yeah, and that's why pattern recognition is one of the pillars of artificial communication.
Yeah,
that's why pattern recognition is one of the pillars of artificial intelligence, like being able to instill that in a machine, which incidentally is essentially made out of math.
Yeah. Right. And because it's a type of communicating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AI, we know, is sort of based on the way that we think, right?
Right.
And even I was thinking even like Morse code, something like this, or binary code, these are, again, attempts to communicate ideas.
Right.
And there's this idea that math is fundamentally universal.
Right. So what you end up with is basically a tower of mathematics, which we're going to discuss right after this quick break.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
And we're back. A tower of mathematics. Now, hang with me on this particular analogy, which I came up with for the How Stuff Works article, How Math Works, which is a broad, a broad look at what math is for generally, for people who are not super into math. It's, more about the philosophy of it and what it is and the kind of stuff we're discussing here. I was really proud of this analogy until I realized that other people had also developed it years before I was born.
I think it's just your intuition, your pattern recognition, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can think of math as this tower that we've built. Like, imagine a human standing on a plane, all right, a big grassy plane. He can only see so far, he or she. He, I don't know.
She,
whatever. Whatever the gender, this human can only see so far given their natural born height and the sight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're going to see better, they're going to want to climb on top of something, right?
Right.
Climb a tree or something. There are no trees around. So they need to build something, and they build a tower, all right? So, and in this analogy, the natural-born height equates to one's natural-born limited mathematical abilities. And then the tower that we build is the system of mathematics. Each level of the mathematical tower enables humans to see farther and achieve more. And this tower, like just as a structured, physical tower, is built of materials and systems.
Mm-hmm.
You would have the guys bring out, some stone for it, some wood, et cetera. And then you'd have, you probably need plumbers, electricians, and other various specialists come out to build the systems that make
right.
up the tower. Well, our tower of mathematics would be made of integers. It would be made of rational numbers, irrational numbers, complex numbers, real numbers. And these are explained in that article that I referenced, How Math Works. You would also have such systems as arithmetic, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus.
Mm-hmm.
In each of these, you can think of as a different level of complexity.
Is that a building block?
Yeah, building block.
Yeah.
Each building on the last.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher the tower gets, the more humans are able to achieve. They reach the point where they're able to use mathematics to better navigate the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to use it to better navigate and understand the world beyond our planet,
mm-hmm.
To build artificial machines and artificial intelligences and create the computer world that we have today. All of these things become possible by building this tower, working on the backs of other geniuses.
Right.
As we construct
standing on
it.
The shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's really interesting. Even like you're talking about, using this system to get outside of ourselves, right? To
right.
get outside of our particular planet, our universe. And we can see that proven out through mathematics throughout history, right? And I was thinking at the very basic level when we began to understand, pattern recognition in nature, something like the Fibonacci sequence, which you have an excellent article on as well. And if for those who are not familiar with it, Fibonacci sequence is essentially like a number wherein each number is the sum of the previous two.
Yeah. And this number sequence is not, it's not like the secret code of everything. Like it doesn't correspond with everything, but it corresponds with an alarming number of things from, propagation numbers in various, species. The number
rabbits.
Rabbits, for
right.
instance, are the classic example. Like if
you can predict how many rabbits will be born.
Right, and how a population will grow based
mm-hmm.
on that. Growth points in trees, petal counts, sunflower seed arrangements. They're just expressed in multiple ways in nature.
Mm-hmm. And this is called the golden ratio too,
yes.
right? This
mm-hmm.
number. And what I thought is when us vain humans, when we apply it to ourselves, we can see it, right?
Right.
We can see this in the number of body parts that we have, the way that our body parts are arranged and spaced. They all follow this golden ratio.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of math, that it helps us understand the world. It helps us predict things in nature that we haven't actually observed yet or proven yet.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when it comes to things like dark matter.
Oh, yeah. Well, and dark matter is this problematic thing, right? And what I think is interesting about math, its contribution to physics, is that we arrive at this understanding because we have this universal language. And many different epochs of time, people, cultures have all contributed to this. So we have this understanding. But then you get to something like dark matter, and it is purely a result of math. And if I'm understanding it correctly, our computational models of the universe weren't really washing. And it was cosmologists who finally figured, you know, via math, that in order for the mathematical models to make sense, there had to be some sort of matter not seen, known, or measured, really, to us, that was occupying the space of the universe. And this is dark matter.
It's like an accountant looking at the books for a business and saying, hey, we got some money missing here. Somebody's embezzling.
Right.
But in this case, the embezzler is the universe itself, which apparently has the right to embezzle. And then it's just figuring out, well, where does this money go? What is it paying for?
Well, and I love this idea of dark matter, as an example of what are the limits of our knowledge? You know, what's knowable, because it's still very much a mystery, but now it's a known mystery, right? It's a known quantity of mystery. And it furthers us to the edge of understanding, just as the theory of relativity did and every other mental construct that helped us to define something like, say, quantum mechanics, that now we are beginning to use in a very concrete way, right? Like, we've got the Hadron Large Collider, and we're hoping to answer some really fundamental questions about physics through that.
Here's the other thing about math. Look back through the history books and show me one war that was waged over disagreements about mathematics, you know? it's like mathematics is like the one thing that we have where everybody's like, we can agree. I mean, you can get into disagreements about certain things in mathematical theory or mathematical philosophy. And, you know, you'll have scholarly debates and I'm sure in some cases some bitter rivalries among mathematicians. But for the most part, this is the thing that we all understand and we can agree on. And while we may use it to prove or dictate science, which can at times, as we know, can become a little problematic, and there'll be disagreements about things that are scientific. But the mathematics, you can argue with mathematics, but the reasoning behind it, the mathematics itself is pure.
It's an elegant system, right? And it's not saddled with. I don't know. As far as I can tell, it is not saddled with a lot of the problems that we have culturally, right? And in communicating, because it is universal. So in every single culture, this number system is going to represent the same thing. And maybe just a little bit differently, but certainly in where we are in history right now, it's widely used.
Right.
And so to your point, you know, it's how can you sit there and argue about the following equation when it is bearing out, at least in theory?
Right. So we come to the inevitable question about mathematics. We've talked about this thing that composes the tower by which we achieve everything we've achieved, you know, our culture, our science, everything rests on it. Our ability to command as much of the physical world as we seem to be able to command, it comes down to mathematics. So, is this something that we created? Did we create something that corresponds to the natural world so well that it allows us to control it? Or is it something that we discovered? Did we discover, in Galileo's words, the language of God, the language of the universe? Is it a human creation or a human discovery? Now, both possibilities are equally awesome, and humans wind up looking pretty good in both equations, because either we are just so awesome that we created something that that the universe corresponds to and unlocks the hidden mysteries of the universe, or we discover, uncovering the bones of God in your backyard and saying, look what I found. It enables me to understand.
And it was always there whether or not you noticed, right? Whether or not you observed it.
That's the other way of looking at it. Does math exist independently of humans? Like, well, there's a planet out there that we don't even know about. We haven't heard. We haven't discovered. Yeah. We haven't been there. Does math exist there?
Okay.
In
some
way, shape, or form?
That's where I see parallels with the Copernican principle, right? Which basically says that humans are not privileged observers of the universe. Like, the universe is going to sit out there and exist regardless of whether or not our gaze is directed at the universe, which I think is pretty interesting. And I think that, math is inherently on the one side existing, and it's for us to discover. On the other hand, the human brain is obviously has developed to a point where it is hardwired to make these observations.
Right.
Right. Like, we know that the neocortex is a new thing for at least the mammalian brain. It was lumped on there on top of the reptilian brain, and it deals with these higher cognitive functions, like spatial reasoning, like, logarithmics. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a chicken egg proposition to me.
Yeah. And, and as we'll continue to discuss here, you can sort of go with both sides. Now, my tower analogy definitely sort of lends itself more to the idea that we built something and it's a human creation. But on the other hand, as was pointed out to me by, a DJ by the name of, DJ Irk, who actually is has a PhD in mathematics. I interviewed him recently on the blog, so you can look that up. But he pointed out that, two hydrogen atoms floating beside two other hydrogen atoms, can still be called four hydrogen atoms, regardless of, you know, if you're on Earth or in another galaxy, that there is a number system at work in the universe.
Just an inherent intrinsic number system.
Yeah. To actually throw in, the words of, to invoke the words of Plato, who, and this is actual Plato, not a DJ named Plato, he argued that math is a discoverable system that underlines the structure of the universe. All right. So in other words, the universe is made of math, and the more we understand this vast interplay of numbers, the more we can understand nature itself.
So math exists to the observer.
Yeah. But then, of course, the other side again is that math is a man-made tool.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's an abstraction. It's free of time and space and merely corresponds with the universe. It doesn't always correspond, completely. Like, consider elliptical planetary orbits. An elliptical trajectory provides astronomers with a close approximation of a planet's movement, but it's not a perfect one.
Okay, see, what I love about that is, again, you get into this sort of gray area that, yes, you've got math as an elegant thing unto itself. It's very straightforward. It's universal. And yet, it doesn't provide all the answers. The mystery still remains.
Right. The logistic theory, there are a number of theories about this, which I'm not going to mention all of them, but the logistic theory holds that math is an extension of human reason and logic. So, again, it's the idea that it's a system, it's an extension of our problem-solving abilities, and it's just the extension of that allows us to handle even larger problems.
It's just an extrapolation of our own cogitating minds, okay?
Yeah, and then there's the intuitional theory, which defines math as a system of purely mental constructs that are internally consistent. So the reason math works so well is because it's internally consistent. The system itself works well, but it happens to correspond to nature.
So you're intuiting pattern recognition.
Right. The extrapolation of the intuitional theory, and one that is less accepted, is one called fictionalist theory, which says that math is essentially a fairy tale. That are just scientifically useful fictions, which is, and again, this is an extreme version, but it helps illuminate this whole idea of math as a human creation. It's kind of the idea that you have, to go biblical for a second. So you have Jesus sitting around on a log, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's on a log, but he's telling parables, right?
Because there are no like fancy seats.
Right. Yeah. And the parables that he's telling in this situation, they're not true stories. They're some story about someone's, it's kind of like Aesop's fables, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aesop's fables are not real stories. They didn't actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a truth to them.
Right.
That resonates throughout human culture, So it's kind of that idea of math. It's like math is an internally consistent story that is not true, but it's real.
Okay. And did we talk about formalist theory yet?
I think I skipped over that.
Because
one.
I want to talk about that one, and then I want to sort of see if we can locate, if it's possible, dark matter in one of these.
Okay.
I don't know, just as like a little quiz for us.
Okay.
Which, just a fun game. But the formalist theory, and this is from your article, argues that mathematics boils down to the manipulation of man-made symbols. In other words, these theories propose that math is a kind of analogy. That draws a line between concepts and real events.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting because I began to think, like, what is the line between art and math then? Because you're communicating through a system of symbols, some sort of experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find that really fascinating for that aspect of it. But I began to think about the fictionalist theory, and I began to think about dark matter. And I don't want to call it a fairy tale. I don't want anybody to misconstrue that. But I did think that if, even though we've got the mathematical model that says 1 + 1 = 2, it may not necessarily be a true statement, right? Because it's still an unknowable quantity. It's still a mystery to a certain degree.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's valid. When you take this even farther, though, you get into questions of, okay, regardless of whether math is something we created or discovered, like how far does it go? What are the limits of mathematics? There's a cosmologist, contemporary dude by the name of Max Tegmark.
Yes.
He has a website and everything.
He has
so you know
theory.
He's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, string theory guy. So this is the idea of math is the ultimate, math is the universe and math is the understanding of the universe, and hey, we can probably figure it out in time.
Oh, I think that's fascinating because in the neuroscience field, they're trying to figure out a theory of the brain, which is very similar to the theory of everything, right?
Right.
It's very difficult to figure out how the brain works, one cohesive theory of the brain. But we know, because we've researched this before, that there's the Blue Brain Project in which they're trying to re-engineer the human brain, essentially map its 100 trillion synapses, and to get some sort of understanding of how it works, much like the universe. Because if what they're saying too, what they're proposing is that the universe is the brain. It is a construct of the brain.
Wow.
So let's just imagine that these, you know, side by side are going down the same rails, and that within 10 years we'd be able to answer this question. I mean, what would we just vaporize with, you know, because we've reached some sort of final end of the meaning, you know?
Yeah, it's like the semantic apocalypse, like we discussed before.
Yeah.
The idea that if you explain the way the magic trick, then it's no longer a magic trick, and we are the magic trick. So
yeah.
Then there's also something we call Gödel's first incompleteness theorem. And
yeah.
This is the work of Austrian mathematician Kurt Gödel, and he basically said in this theorem that any theory that's based on self-evident but unprovable proofs is incomplete or inconsistent. So the implication here is that,
this is what keeps us from vaporizing.
Yeah. So basically the idea here is that mathematics is inexhaustible. All right.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many problems we solve, we're inevitably going to encounter more unsolvable problems, within the existing rules. So this would seem to discount the idea of a theory of everything, because math is the system that whether we created it or discovered it, it goes on forever. It's like the to what decimal point can we carry out pi? You know, you can carry it out to the billions, you can carry it out to the trillions, but can you carry it out to the end? No, because it's infinite.
Because there is no end. Well, but that's what's so interesting too. You know, if the Blue Brain Project does have some sort of breakthrough about our understanding of the human brain, and if string theory begins to prove itself out in a more concrete way, then does it just spiral other questions that we need to answer
into the
ether? Which is probably the case, right? I don't think it just closes down our understanding and we finally say, we are complete. We know it all.
Yeah, it's like we get new, it's like life. You solve one problem, there's going to be another one. You see that one item in the store, that one game, that one book you really need, and you finally get it, and then there's just going to be another one you end up setting your heart on, so.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's not going to actually make me, become a Scrabble champ. I don't think. I don't know. Maybe we could take some theories of the brain and some string theory and
apply it to Scrabble.
Yeah.
We should do something on Scrabble sometimes.
I know. It's pretty, yeah. Word freak.
Well, hey, there you go. So that's math. from a very broad level. It's like like math is a city, and we're flying over it at a fairly high altitude and trying to make out as much as we can of it through the clouds.
That's right. Yeah. We're just tourists of math.
Cool. Well, I have a couple of listener mail here for us.
All right, listen.
Non-math related, because it would be impossible for someone to respond to the podcast that we just recorded.
I don't know. Multiverses.
Maybe.
String theory.
This first one comes from a listener by the name of Peyton. And Peyton says, hey, Robert and Julie, this is Peyton from Hendersonville, North Carolina. I live just up the road a piece from you guys in Atlanta. Actually, it's about 3 hours away. I just wanted to say that I enjoyed the Nuclear Fallout podcast, and it actually reminded me of a very funny episode of The Office from a few years ago. It was the one where Pam's old boyfriend, Roy, comes into the office and attacks Jim. Fortunately, Dwight quickly pepper sprays him, and everyone in the office is immediately bent over, coughing and rubbing their eyes. A similar thing would happen in the case of a nuclear strike. It's true that only one concentrated area would receive the full destruction of the bomb, but its effects would be felt all over the world. Just thought I'd share the analogy with you guys. Keep up the great podcast. So, yeah, this is the example he's bringing up here is a small application of fluid dynamics. The way these particles of pepper spray, the particles of pepper or whatever, would distribute through a closed environment in moving air, in moving fluid. And then nuclear fallout, as we discussed in the previous podcast, a lot of that depends on, you know, how is air, how is this fluid moving on, you know, around the globe in a local area, in an urban environment, etc.
I just like the fact that in this analogy, Dwight is kind of like the enriched uranium. I think that's appropriate.
Yeah. We received another one here. This is from Eric. And Eric writes in about the dog podcast, Does My Dog Really Love Me, that we did. And actually, he's responding to an email response. He's actually responding to a response. Anyway, he says, hey, you had an email from a dog owner who felt that maybe his dog had Stockholm Syndrome. Having adopted more than one rescue dog, I've noticed many dogs who have been abused are very skittish at first, but when they realize they will no longer be hit, they show quite a lot more love. My current dog, an Aussie named Ghost, was very skittish at first. If you reached down to give him a rub, he'd always flinch. He was also always very skittish around new people. We started having all house guests give him a treat when they arrived. Last week, while walking him off-leash, we came upon another couple walking their dogs. Ghost walked right up to them for a rub. Personally, I think this person's dog was simply afraid of him at first, but soon realized his new owner was okay. So anyway, there's an account of dogs. I don't know if it's love, but certainly it shows that dogs are able to get over trauma a lot easier than humans.
Yeah. Do you think Ghost has something to do with maybe being a little skittish?
I don't know.
Name Ghost.
He offered to send us a picture, but did not.
I'm not, you know, questioning
the existence of the dog.
Yeah. Or even the name choice. I'm just wondering. You never know what dogs really understand. I think I'd be a little skittish if I was named Ghost.
I think that's a lot to put it on the naming of the dog.
I know.
But still, I have heard the argument that the name you give a dog does have a huge play a role in how that dog is. Like, it's just about, like, how, like, I forget which dog expert this was, but they pointed out that if you have a big scary pit bull and you name it Cujo, then you're already, you know, ascribing a certain energy to that animal, you know? And that you're, like, on just a subconscious level, you're already making the dog this scary thing that you're going to be submissive to and is, you know, maybe not your friend.
Oh, that's interesting. So psychologically on the part of the person who's perceiving the dog.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe it's kind of, I don't know if it actually crosses over to, like, human names as well. Because you've heard, like, if you name a child, like, Egbert or something, it's not really a name, like, Hubert, that's kind of, you're kind of setting them up to be, a bookish nerd, I guess. And if you're kind of call them Brutus or something, then they're kind of destined to be on the football team, right?
Because, unless they're taking some sort of, like, classical, like, antiquities interpretation from that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's certainly not the only factor, but you know, you wonder to what extent you're forecasting their future.
We're gonna have to check in with Apple in a couple of years, see how that's working for her.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's Gwyneth Paltrow's kid, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We shall see.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, hey, if you guys have anything to share with us, or you want to check out what we're into, you can find us online. We are Blow the Mind on both Twitter and Facebook. And do check out HowStuffWorks.com. You can find that math article we talked about, How Math Works. You can find the Fibonacci Numbers article. And there's also some really cool stuff about fractals, right?
Yeah, we have an incredible fractal image gallery, which is, I mean, if you would like to see math as interpreted in these incredible figures, then you should check that out. It's on our homepage. and it's definitely worth a look. It's not something that we were able to get to today, but Mandelbrot's set, one of the fractals, is just amazing.
Yeah, and if you don't know what fractals are, guess what? They have an article about how fractals work as well, and it's excellent.
And yeah, if you want to drop us a line, please do so at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.